Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hello? Hello? We're almost there. All right. Hey, long time no hear.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing well. Super excited to hear you again.
Well, I'm alive. That's about it.
Oh, man, I hear you.
All right, folks, you're going to begin the call here in just a moment. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Wednesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your moderator for this evening's conference call brought to you by Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. You're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America as a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, nobody here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my suggestion to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, and you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced as these thoughts and opinions might be, in the end, they are just that. They're just people's opinions, nonetheless. It's all just for entertainment purposes, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Let's go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. First of all, if we can take everybody to the homepage, we look up in the upper right-hand corner, you see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, a separate page will come up with just two items on an otherwise blank page. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That's your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high win rates in traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly required for. But that's not really why it's up here. The reason we've got it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course, you get into this jurisdiction, or you get into this common law default process, you'll see very quickly that it acts as a perfect mirrored homework assignment, a real life application of what you've just learned in the jurisdictionary course. And of course, since the common law default process is known mostly for traffic scenarios, and that's what it's usually used for, folks find it a little bit easier to start with that, a little less nerve-wracking, as usually traffic scenarios are not that big of a deal on the grand scheme of things. And so once you've gone through both of those, then you have a good education foundation underneath you, and then you've had a little real-life test of it to see how that works. Both of those have a very generous request of a contribution, the jurisdictionary, of just $250, and the common law default process of just $150. And so we encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. Also, on the subject of your remedies in the law, you're probably familiar with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on the website that you requested or stop and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are many features, many study groups, multiple different information providers on multiple subjects that your remedy is in the law. And all of this is just one website, and there's a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit there for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that would be suited for your particular situation, you can email me at mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com, or you can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. All right, Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communication. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. Private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's a very easy setup wizard. You know, put your name in here, click next, put your address in here, click next, zip code, whatever it may be. And then you pick from a long list of topics. These topics can range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS matters, asset protection, veterans' rights, on and on and on. If you can think of it, it's probably in that list. And then when it's all done, it puts it together kind of like some people would think of a social media, but nothing like social media. It's very custom. It's very private. It puts you in contact with one another based on the common interests and the radius and area that you've chosen. And, of course, the idea here is to put the power of education and the power of communication back in the hands of the common man. If you're in need of legal advice or need somebody to represent you, then you're going to need to get an attorney. It's that simple. But if there's a way, a private way, that you could discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe perhaps you jump on one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first person comes back and says, well, I don't agree with that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that might be a valid opinion, but it's probably not going to do you any good. Maybe the second person says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go down to my law library at my courthouse. By the way, every county has a courthouse, at least. You know, every courthouse has a law library. I'd look up these terms, maybe watch this YouTube video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Now you're learning something. Maybe the third person comes in and says, those are great ideas. Also, I'd go to this website and check out this educational process. Well, now you're digging in deep. Now you're actually getting somewhere. And that's all, again, that we're trying to get folks to do here is just start communicating with one another. Of course, there's no cost for using Grass Fire Communications. And so hopefully you'll pass that around. If this is not an option for you yet, you have Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with, the card process. Of course, you pick up a membership at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Again, a very generous asking of just a meager contribution of $10 a month. You can do that with your auto pay for your card, PayPal, whatnot. But if that's not an option for you yet, You have Freedoms Radio. Every one of these calls are broadcasted nightly, completely free of charge. There's never a charge to use Freedoms Radio. Now, of course, once you are able to, and you pick up your $10 a month there for your remedy, then every single call is recorded. You have years of knowledge that you can go back, a vast wealth of experience and education that you can go back and check out. But if that's not for you yet, then freedomsradio.com would definitely be the way to go. So we would suggest that. All right. Real quick, too, at Freedoms Radio, while you're listening, there's a question box. And so if you have a question or a comment, you can type it in there. Make sure you don't forget to click the submit button, though. If you don't click the submit button at the bottom there, we won't see it. But anything that's submitted there, we always try to read that out over the air. All right, starting to wind down here, I'd like to go over a last bit of important housekeeping. This portion is called your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedy is in the law, is under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're going directly with an information provider. These info providers pay for advertising at Your Remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that info provider along with any other expenses that might be associated with your particular educational product or service. When you contact us, all we do is simply listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would never be able to find, just simply because they made it that way. They made it where they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not all teaching efforts by the info providers is always guaranteed to be successful. Everybody hopes for the best. We plan for the best. If there's any question of that, we encourage you to check out yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials. And you'll see very quickly what we're talking about. But you're going directly with that information provider. So what that brings us to is the sensitive question of what is your refund policy or your exchange policy at Your Remedy is in the law specifically. Well, there is none. If there was going to be any question of a refund or a credit or anything of that nature, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to an information provider's process or time. You're expected to have, you know, had a conversation with them or two at least, which of course we will always facilitate and make sure that they, you know, it's the right fit for you, the right personality, the right educational material, and that you're comfortable with it. All right, lastly here, pertaining to all of the info providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we want to remind everybody that all of these speakers on these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he'll take a brief moment to introduce our speaker for this evening.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Martin. I appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to have a little treat for you towards the end of the call. I'll leave you in suspense on this, but I think that we found our favorite box of cereal, or Mr. Slevin has found our favorite box of cereal. We'll find out. Tonight we're going to talk about, again, LLCs, but I'd call this the Super LLC because it's something that is applicable not only for an employee, for anyone that works for somebody and you're an employee of that status. You can utilize this LLC to translate from being an employee to being a worker for your LLC. Or if you're an entrepreneur, you have a better arrangement and a highly more profitable picture if your LLC uniquely and particularly does not have to pay income taxes based off of the revenue that it generates. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn this call over to Mr. Slevin. Go ahead, buddy.
Good evening, good evening. How's everybody doing today?
Okay. Very well. How about yourself?
Oh, we've been having grand old time. There's this book coming out.
There's a country song about that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, the book coming out of here is out of my recent escapades is going to be outstanding. So, but not to dwell too much on the exciting, we're going to go to the mundane and like, who in the heck is this is subject to or liable for the income tax? Well, we don't really know because there has been probably a moon's worth of obfuscation, camouflage, and outright deceit placed upon this subject. So in order to find out things like that, though, you got to go to the statutes. And these are things that are written down by Congress and signed off by the president, and then or voted on by the Congress and then signed off by the president. And then they go into this department that breaks them all down and ships them off into the various code sections of the United States Code. So this process has to comply with the rules of statutory construction. These are long and varied and crazy, but a couple of them that really means something to us is that first, if any word or phrase is defined as a term, then only that term's definition can be used when reading or applying the statute. So another rule is that if you do define a term with a list of things, all those things must be in the same family. So here's an example. The term edibles includes an apple, a banana, a grape, a rock, and a chicken. Well, obviously, rock is not of the same class, and therefore this would be an invalid definition. So noting those two things, we're going to run over to the definition section, which is 7701A of Title 26 United States Code, otherwise known as the Internal Revenue Code. And in 7701A1, we find the term person. Quote, the term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, a state, partnership, association, company, or corporation, end quote. Now we look at that word individual, you know. So what, that's not really a thing, that's a delimiter. It means one of something. So what of what? A spotted lizard? A corporate official? Hey, a one-eyed jack? Or could it be the term individual as defined in Black's Law 6th edition, which states the term individual is existing as an indivisible entity? Well, now that would be inclusive of a trust, a state, partnership, because all of those are entities. So an individual is an indivisible entity. Huh. Sounds pretty fair, right? So in section 701A2, we find the term partnership, which says in part, the term partnership includes an unincorporated organization. So in the business world, you have three main forms of businesses. These are statutory. You have the corporation, which is chartered by the whatever jurisdiction. Then you have a partnership, which is joined. And then you have the limited liability company. Limited liability company is organized, not incorporated. So the term partnership includes an unincorporated organization, which is a limited liability company. Just for those of you guys out there who think you're an employee, if we jump down to A20, employee, it rambles on for about 100 words or so, and then it comes to this thing. It says the term employee shall include a full-time life insurance salesman who is considered an employee for the purposes of Chapter 21. So everybody out there who is not a full-time life insurance salesman, where do you think that you are defined as an employee in the tax code? Well, something to think about. So in order for you to be required to file and pay the income tax and all of its various things, you must be liable for it. Liable is the same thing as subject to and the same thing as required. Okay? So let's jump over to section 701 of Title 26, and we find this, quote, a partnership, you already read that definition, as such, shall not be subject to the income tax imposed by this chapter, period. Well, that's a good place to be then, right? If it's not subject to it, well, you want to be a partnership, which is also a limited liability company. So, second sentence of 701 really lays it out perfectly. It says a person's carrying on business as partners shall be liable for the income tax, only in their separate or individual capacities. Here again, what's the word individual mean? Mm-hmm. So we find here the true explicit definition of the income tax. The subject of that tax is carrying on business. And if we go back to the 1909 revenue law, that's carrying on business in the corporate capacity. And they're liable because that's what they're doing. It's not the person that's liable. It's their activity that makes them liable. And so because it says the person's carrying on business as partners shall be liable for the income tax only in their separate and individual capacities. Well, yeah, because they're performing the act. So the income is the measure of the tax. Carrying on business is the subject of the tax. And if any of you really want to go into this, I want to get you a PDF of Title 26 and search and find liability or liable or made liable and income tax in the same sentence. I believe that the only place you'll find it is section two or sentence two of the section 701. Well, that's okay. Now we know who is not subject to it and who is liable for it, which are liable for and subject to are synonyms. And if you're not liable for it, you're not subject to it. And the another word in law is immune. You cannot be in any way penalized because you just don't fit the criteria. Well, that sets this up. So how does our company make this or use this knowledge to help you out and make you where or give you a way to succeed and earn and keep all that you earn? So we have a product called the private firm. Again, this comes from the Flint v. Stone Tracy Supreme Court case when they said private firms are not subject to the income tax, a.k.a. not liable for, a.k.a. immune. And so our private firm is based on a limited liability company. And the best ones are from the state of New Mexico. And this is why. Because when you go out and one of our people goes to the state of New Mexico, the secretary of that state, and says, hey, we want to organize a limited liability company. The secretary says, well, here you go. Fill out this articles of organization, not incorporation, organization. And that articles of organization form requires a minimum of two parties. They are known as the organizer and the registered agent, both of which can be other LLCs. Now, think about that real quick, and you'll come up with, oh, that means that one LLC can own another LLC, can own another LLC, and all these are having nobody's name on them. So there's no public record of who organized this thing. You know, so like, you know, Nevada and Delaware and other places, when you go and want to incorporate or organize in that state, you have to fill out this thing with names on it called a nominee list. Now, they protect it, but in New Mexico, the list simply does not exist. That which does not exist cannot be found. So once the Secretary of State issues the certificate of organization for this new limited liability company, then one of our other workers takes it over to the IRS website and fills out these individuals have never filed a 1040 U.S. individual income tax return, and therefore they are without the jurisdiction of the IRS. So they go and they file a SS-5, I believe it is, SS-4, one or the other. Anyway, and this is all done via the website, and They are looking for an EIN number, which is employer identification number, which is another form of tax identification number. And most of you know that so is a Social Security number is also the a form of TIN or TIN. So when our non-filer, or never filer, I guess is a good way of saying him, when our never filer goes and he goes to get the limited liability company and EIN, it asks some questions. And it says, like, why is the LLC requesting an EIN? Well, there's about five or six answers down there, or reasons. And one of them, which we always choose, is called banking purposes. And the subtitle goes, select this option if the reason for applying for the EIN is strictly to satisfy banking requirements or local law. Did you hear anything about taxes in there? Nope, because the EIN going to the limited liability company is for banking purposes only. No taxes involved because Section 701 says so. So, upon receiving the EIN, that individual that made the application is known as the sole member at that point in time. So this sole member holds a meeting of the company, a meeting of the membership. That's membership. The owners of a limited liability company are members having percentages of membership. And in the meeting, they make a resolution commissioning a third party as a manager for this LLC, this new one. And manager is the only officer of a limited liability company, where you got corporations have president, CFO, directors, and so forth. And then partnerships, statutory partnerships, have limited partners and general partners. But a manager is the only officer of a limited liability company. And the company can have as many managers as it wishes. And the manager, the members can commission as many managers as they want. And the membership doesn't have to stay in just 100%. You can break it down into four or five decimal places. You know, so you can have one hundredth of a percent of a limited liability company, and therefore you can have all of these certificates of membership out there making money for the company. So now the new company has an EIN and a manager, and that manager takes the EIN, his letter of authority or the commission as a manager, and the certificate of organization down to a brick and mortar bank, and gets the new company a checking account with a debit card that only has the title manager and the company name on it. And it has all the electronic bells and whistles that you find in normal and typical banks today. Brings it all back to the office and hands it off to another person who brings up a pay-as-you-go cell phone. And this cell phone is programmed with the electronic banking of the brick and mortar bank. And we also include Square app and Cash app. A Square is a point of sale app. So once it's attached to the new company, that company then can take debit cards and credit cards as payment for its product and or services. The other thing is Square also offers a checking account that can be had and a debit card for the new company. So you flesh Square out, and now you have two checking accounts and two debit cards feeding the new company that we just formed. And then we have Cash App. Cash App is a really great peer-to-peer platform that you can move money back and forth real quick. And you can buy Bitcoin, and you can also get another checking account there and with a debit card. So once that's all connected up, then you have three checking accounts, three debit cards, and several other spiritless things attached to these things. So if something happens to one of the checking accounts or the debit card, then you've got a pair of backups, and two spares is always better than one. So once we put all that together and make sure it moves, everything moves, money moves, the account works, the phone works, puts it all together, put it in a box, and we ship it to the company. We ship the company to the client. Upon receiving it, the client becomes equipped to carry on business worldwide, income tax free. Does that sound pretty good to you? Sounds really great to me. So what we have here is a very small business once they open that up. Now, you can link a bunch of these together. And I like to use the example of a dentist. So a dentist is practicing dentistry. Okay, so he has a practice. So if somebody were to sue him and to sue the practice, then they could take all of the assets of the practice if they were to get a judgment against it. So one way of doing this is you have one LLC that owns the practice and the dentist works for the practice, works for that LLC. Now, in order to do his job, he's got to have equipment like chairs and drills and stuff. So you have a second LLC that owns all the equipment in the office and rents it back to the practice. And then you have the building where all this equipment sits. And so you have a third LLC that owns the building and rents it to the practice. And then we have a fourth one for the to control and pay the dental hygienist, the clerk, and whoever else is working in the back office, front office of the practice. And as Michael alluded to earlier, each of those people can have their own LLC or, as we said, a private firm. So that private firm is being paid by the worker LLC. And then so everybody involved is income tax free. And this makes the dentist himself very much judgment proof, because even if somebody did sue the practice and get a judgment against him, he would have like malpractice insurance for his personal stuff. But then, you know, the only thing in the practice really that's a seizable would be the checking account. And that can be drained really quickly because you'd have to pay off, you know, everybody, they could, the practice could pay like 1 year's rent on all the equipment and the buildings and the employer of the workers in the other LLCs. So that's a quick and dirty way of moving all this together and in a very complex fashion that totally protects the assets of the practice or any other small business. Estate planning. So, you know, mom and pop have a cow. They have a cow and they have a house and they have a car and they have, you know, probably a boat or something like that. So all of these are titled assets, okay, because you have a title to your car, a title to your house, and so on. So they, all these titled assets can be moved into the LLC's name, and then the beneficiaries, typically children but not necessarily, would then be handed the letters of authority, also known as the manager's commission, and with instructions on how the present managers, which are mom and pop, wish the business to continue. And mom and pop become disabled or dead, and then the kids just, or the beneficiaries or the new managers, just pick up their paperwork and continue the business of maintaining the assets and or dispersing them as directed. So that's a real short thing of how you do this estate planning. Oh, by the way, that you don't give any probate or any estate tax, because there's no transfer of estate, because the LLCs are built in perpetuity. That means they live forever. So as I talked about a little bit in the dentist thing, in the dentist example, we have a W-2 situation. So if you're working with a company right now, you know, you have an employer-employee relationship, and that's a contractual relationship. By the way, all business is contract, and all contract is negotiation. Remember that phrase. All business is contract, and all contract is negotiation. So there's this thing out there called the burden rate. So how do you get, say, Joe works for IBM. So how do you get IBM to give you a 20% increase and reduce their labor cost by 25%? That sounds like a win-win situation if anybody's listening out there. So, well, this burden rate says that the employee costs the company about 1.5 to 1.6 times their salary. So we'll say for fun that Joe is making $100,000 a year. And he learns how to do this, gets his own private firm and walks up to his boss and goes, "Hey, boss, how'd you like to cut your labor costs by 25%? Boss goes, "That sounds good. How do we do that?" Said, "Well, right now there's a contract between IBM and me for my services. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to interpose this limited liability company in. So it'll be IBM paying the limited liability company for my services. And right now, you know, you're paying me $10,000 a month, roughly. $8,000 a month, roughly. And, so you're going to now, instead of all the bells and whistles and paperwork and everything and the multiple checks and dot, 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 all you're going to have to do is write one check per month to the limited liability company for $10,000. Of course, that's $120,000 a year, which means the limited liability company is now making 20% more than Joe was as an employee. And it's only going to cost you that $120,000, where it used to cost you $160,000, and your paperwork gets dropped down to one form, a 1099, made out to the company, to the limited liability company, for the $120,000, and that's it. How does that sound? If anybody in business has ever, or if anybody out there has ever been in business, cutting your labor cost is paramount. And of course, you still get the same guy doing the same job. You know, so everything works the same, just different money flow, and the IRS gets cut out entirely. So, that sounds pretty good, huh? What are your questions? Is there anybody out there?
Yep. Well, it's a mute button. Technical difficulty.
You're going to have to fix that.
All right, folks, star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand, and we'll call on you one at a time and unmute you. You're listening on the Freedoms Radio side. Type your question or comment in the question bar, and as always, please don't forget to click that little submit button at the bottom.
Oh, while people are thinking about that, I needed to bring up one guy. We got a new information provider. And he's known as Tony the Tiger, or Tiger for short. And Tiger has this really cool thing that he can get these LLCs, once they've been formed by our organization and put all together, then he has a way of building them a business credit. All right? It takes time and takes a little money, but you can literally, within 6 weeks, the company or thereabouts, you know, nothing's exact in this business. But within about 6 weeks, you can have the new limited liability company can have $1 million credit line and get out there and purchase buildings or equipment or vehicles or whatever is necessary to increase their business profitability. So look up Tony the Tiger with Mr. Edwards, and you'll be happier. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll fill in a little bit more while they're thinking about pressing star 2. I've acquired one of these myself, ladies and gentlemen, because in addition to what I do in marketing, people like Mr. Slevin and John and Bernie and GW, others, and so many others behind the scene, I'm guilty of being an entrepreneur. I love to do business. I know. Shame on me. you wouldn't guess it, but I'm even considered a constitutionist.
Oh my word!
Anyways, I was a Republican, but I got over it when I saw some of that nonsense. So I'm a constitutionist. Anyways, so I have acquired one of these. Mr. Slevin was kind of gentle when he was talking about the time it takes and the cost. It doesn't take that long, that's correct, but it is somewhat dear in price. But
you get what you pay for.
Yeah, look. If you give me say $50,000 and I give you $100,000 line of credit, was that worth it to you? Now if you're an entrepreneur, you're salivating over that. What if I give you $100,000? Yes, you can do it twice. That's absolutely correct. Well, you'd be 109,500 because you want Mr. You'd have to get two of Mr. Slevin's LLCs. But yes, you can. And it does take only about 6 weeks or so to have the whole thing published. And now you've got tools that, and I can say this from experience. I had my own manufacturing, wholesale, retail, jewelry operation for a number of years. I started in the jewelry business when I was 16. And when I went out on my own at 24, having, you know, the Zales used thought of me as an employee. I thought of myself as an apprentice getting paid. And after 8 years, I opened up my own store. And I learned the art of negotiating with bankers is totally different than negotiating with regular folk. And they have this premise of superiority and control over you, mere business person. And my ability to get things done, acquiring capital to invest in inventory, new machinery, things like that, in addition to the sales that I did once a year, I got a big shot in the arm. It's called Christmas. And Mother's Day was a small shot in the arm. The rest of the year, if you could order your business so that you survived on the other 10 months of the year, Mother's Day and Christmas made it all worthwhile. That's what you held out for. So if you operated at a break-even point throughout the year, Christmas and Mother's Day would more than make up for that. And that's where I would often find myself. But sometimes I needed that Christmas push, like in August or something, because I needed to buy equipment or needed to get inventory for Christmas that I, you know, hadn't measured out correctly. So anyways, the banks control everything. Had I had the opportunity at that time to pay Guido $50,000, get me a $100,000 line of credit, no questions asked, at a regular bank rate, not inflationary rates by a money lender, but just regular bank rates, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'd have done it twice, like I said. So this is a fantastic opportunity if you're an entrepreneur, if you're planning to build your business, or if you just don't want to go through the male bovine excrement of dealing with a banker who wants to be a proctologist at the same time. If you're looking for that, it's got a 50 grand game to play with it, and it's done that quick. So without having anything else said, let's open up the call for questions. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, because nobody's raised their hands yet. They're just enthralled with this great news, I suppose, and what Mr. Slevin has shared with everyone. Press star 2. Otherwise, we're just going to go home and go to bed. Let me check Freedom's Radio.
Yeah, I just checked.
Okay. Anybody? I guess not. Give it another
short
minute,
night,
folks. Yeah, it's going to be another short night. I mean, to me, this is awesome news. I can always count on Michael. Go ahead, Martin.
Yes. All right. Let me get you unmuted here. And you are all set, sir. Go ahead. Oh, no. Goodness gracious. There we go.
Good evening. Can we do a payment plan?
What do you think? You know what they say at the bank? If you don't need the money, they don't lend it to you, right? If you need it, you never get it.
That's right.
No, there's no payment plan, unfortunately. It's got to be done. I mean, I think we could do, like 25 down and 25 in 30 days, but that would be about the only thing that we could do.
Well, that's reasonable.
Good.
Yeah. That's just, you know.
Yeah, because what happens when they do all of this magic work, there's a key involved that sets it all free. So they're still in control until you've, you know, paid your balance from their standpoint. They've that have something to lose, but they're at least halfway whole. And then you have nothing if you don't continue with what you're doing, because they're not going to give you the key without having been paid in full. So there you go.
Well, of course. But, I mean, this is just the greatest advantage of any business in the world.
You got it.
You got it. You got it. When I heard about it, I jumped on it all fours, and I've only got two on the ground.
I've got some things I'm doing, but it just takes time to unwind it.
How much do one of those big rigs that you operate cost?
Millions.
Oh, plural?
Yes.
I thought maybe $3.25 million or something.
Well, that's for a little rig. The big rigs start in about $3 to $5 million.
So you can nothing make one of your small rigs for how much? How much could it to get you in business?
Oh goodness, you're talking.
I mean, could you get in business? Could you get in business for less than $1 million and have that rig yours?
Well, you can buy a used one, yes.
Okay. So you've got a used one. You've mechanically run over it. It's going to work fine. Now you own your own rig. So instead of you just being the operator for X amount of dollars an hour, now you're contracting to do a job for X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, which is better?
And there is a ton of construction and more of it breaking loose every day.
There you go.
They can't get enough people or equipment. The rental companies are just doing a booming business. And when I say booming, this job.
Would you be more profitable renting a rig or buying a rig outright on your own that was an affordable within the million?
Well, it just depends on how big the job is.
Okay.
Yeah. But either way, you're going to make money.
Are you going to make more money, though, than renting the rig?
If you own the rig and you were the operator, you would make more money than just bare renting the rig, yes.
Okay, that's what I was trying to pull out from you. There you go.
Just a note on where you're talking about the construction breaking loose. I'm in a construction project myself, and we came up and we needed some engineering drawings. This was kind of unexpected, so I got a list of engineers in the area and called them up. I called about half a dozen of them, and all of them were at least 2 months out before they could get to me. And we went like, okay, change of plans. But that's the point is, everybody, like you said, everybody is breaking loose and building stuff now.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's amazing. But what you've got is just, I don't know, I'd call it a cod lock.
That's a good word.
Anyway, right. most people don't see it or can't see it. I don't know. I tell people about this all the time. Tune in, listen, dial, you know, ask a question. Most of them are too timid to even ask a question, I guess. I have to prod them to get them to listen in.
You can lead a horse to water, but you know the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a guy right now, he's waiting to get bailed out of jail because he got set up. And when he bought a gun, and 10 minutes later he got stopped, and the first question they asked him was, where's the gun? Well, how did they know he had a gun if it was just a random stop?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I think he just woke up, and his friends aren't his friends anymore. But it's going to cost him dearly.
Yep.
But that's life in the big city. You know, you make decisions, and then you know, if you follow through, you suffer the consequences.
Right.
I've got Michael and Mr. Slevin here on the phone. Any of you have any general contractors in the Florida Panhandle area, south Alabama area, really south? If you do, let me know. I have some well, general contracting work that needs to be done on a home up there.
Okay, so you want a home contractor, a custom home contractor. Well, yeah, I'll look around up here because there's a lot of them. It's booming up here.
Where are you at now?
I'm in the penthouse. I'm at next to Eglin Air Force Base at Hulbert Field.
Really?
It's a special operations airfield.
Yeah, I know where you're
at. Yeah, I'm very, very familiar with that area. Done a lot of work in that area.
When they take off, they go right over the 98 and over the sand dunes and out into the Gulf.
Yeah.
Yep.
What I need is someone that a GC that can take a fixer upper and turn it into a gem for a decent amount.
Well, I'll ask it in the morning. The store I stop at every morning for breakfast, they all kinds of construction people coming in there.
Wonderful.
And I mean all
but
kinds.
Most importantly, it's not somebody just raises their hand and says I'm a GC. I'm talking. See, if you said, "Well, I'm in the area. I'll look at it," I wouldn't bat an eye, no matter what you told me, because as long as I've known you, I know you to be a truthful, a man with integrity. So whatever you tell me is fact. But anybody else that would tell me something, I'm sitting there going, "Guy, is he telling the truth or what?"
Yeah.
So we'll talk privately on that. Yeah, we'll talk privately on that, Michael. All right. It's good to know. All right. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, it's good night, sweetheart. We don't want to do that. You've got a great opportunity here. If not, good night, sweetheart. All right, Martin. Take us home.
All right. Folks, feel free to join us again tomorrow night. Same time, same place. What are we having tomorrow night, Mr. Edward?
Well, tomorrow Thursday night is a recording, and the recording is Glenn Roberts. Glenn Roberts is a graduate of law school, and he passed the bar, the Florida bar, and he has no interest in becoming an attorney. He is now semi-retired, and we're not offering him a front point position. Now, that goes to John, but he is supportive of what we do, and learn from the call that you'll listen to tomorrow night and know that he is part of the team, providing support that we need. So that's what tomorrow night is. Thursday night is that. Go ahead, Michael. You asked again another question.
Driver Tom up there.
Huh?
The truck driver, Tom, that has some information. That also has a physical condition. He needs some kind of help.
Yeah.
Well, when I'm done with this job, I would be available to drive up and do what I could help him with.
Give me a call again. Let me know.
Okay. Because it'll be like May or June before we're done out here.
Okay. Copy that. All right, Charlie, go ahead, Mark. Let's get Charlie.
Have you always had something, or is it just tomorrow night?
Repeat.
Well, you said there would be a recording tomorrow night, Thursday night.
Correct.
I was not aware that Thursday night there was something on the program routinely. Is that changed?
Yeah.
Oh, it's all up in here.
Okay, every night of the week we have a call off of this PIN number, phone number and PIN. But on.
Here we need garbage can.
Okay, I couldn't understand that. Anyways, on the Thursday night call, it's the only call that we have that's not live. It's just a recording right now, and I'm in negotiations with a gentleman that does allodial title. John does allodial title on land and property. But this fellow here, that's all he does. And so we're bringing him aboard prayerfully, and we will be giving him Thursday nights to go live with. Other than that, Friday night is the same phone number but a different PIN. It is only for anyone interested in a scripture study, which I do. I host that one on Friday night. And we have another scripture study that we do at 6 o'clock Eastern on Saturday late afternoon as well, just for people's interest. Sunday, there are no calls. I save that for something important, you know, out of the realm, something that's once in a while. So that's what our calls are, Charlie. Monday is GW. Tuesday is litigation. Wednesday is Mr. Slevin with the LLC. Thursday is the recorded call from Glenn Roberts. And by the way, you listen to it once or twice. It's the same call. So after that, you don't listen to it anymore. Don't need to. And then Saturday is Bernie. So those are the scheduled calls for this phone number and this PIN. And if anybody wants to know about the scripture study call, just get in touch with me, and I'll give you the PIN number for that.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you,
appreciate
sir.
Appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Martin, when this call is over, I'm going to call you right back, okay?
All right. Sounds good. All right, folks, that'll be it. We'll see everybody back here tomorrow night. Until then, have a wonderful evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.